Kevin Wells, don't go anywhere. I got to tell you an update on the ice cream sundae bar that I brought to Thanksgiving.
Wait.
Yes, and the rest of you, don't go anywhere. This is Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. And we're here for an hour today. It's a quick show. We're going to be talking with criminal defense attorney and former prosecutor Audrey Anderson. She has become one of our main experts here on all big trials, and we've had a few of them over the last few weeks, and she's going to be joining us to talk about the Ahmaud Arbery verdict, guilty for those three folks down in Georgia. We're also going to be chatting a little bit about top legal stories of the week, and of course, our question of the day. And here it is. This is a brand new one this week, so you can get ready to call on in right now, 312-981-7200. Here it is. In 1968, a person held what job on average for 15 years? Now, in the same job, that person holds it for 26 years. So what's the job that in 1968, the person on average would hold it for about 15 years, and now they have it for about 26? 312-981-7200. If you get that, you're going to win a $50 gift card to 5050 Restaurant Group. More on that in a bit, and plenty more on the show coming up on WGN. Well, a very happy Saturday afternoon. I had to check the date. I know we're normally on Saturdays, but this weekend is so confusing. Yes, it is Saturday. It is November 27th. It's 1:10. Thanks so much for joining us here on Let's Get Legal. In a little bit, we'll talk with Audrey Anderson, criminal defense attorney and former prosecutor. I love having her on because she's been on both sides of these big trials. And we'll talk about the Ahmaud Arbery verdict and what also could be coming next for the three defendants. Well, now, folks that have been accused, or excuse me, found guilty of murder, what's next for them? They could be facing additional charges. In fact, will be. And the federal Justice Department's going after them for hate crimes, too, which may seem a little superfluous at the moment, but it's still something that the DOJ plans to move forward with. We'll do our top three stories of the day. It's only an hour long, so we're going to jump right in here to the question of the day. In 1968, a person held what job on average for 15 years? Now a person holds that job for 26 years. I got a few callers now, then I'll tell you about the ice cream sundae bar, Kevin, in just a moment. Let's go to Barbara. Barbara, good afternoon. How are you doing here on this Saturday?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Nice holiday weekend. Did you have a good turkey on Thursday?
A very good one. And how about you?
Oh, it was very good. I had two of them. My brother fried one and then smoked one on the grill, and they were juicy and tasty. So
delicious.
Yeah, it was. What job?
I went to my daughter-in-law's, and it was wonderful.
Oh, that's wonderful to hear, Barbara. What do you think? What's the job do you think that someone held for 15 years about 50 years ago? Now they hold it for 26 years.
I thought senator.
That is a wonderful guess, and I bet you're right somewhat. That is not the answer I'm looking for, but I want to look that up because, boy, we have some octogenarian senators, which I never have a problem with. I love the idea of people still succeeding late in life and doing well. But yeah, we have senators serving for 25, 30, 35 years nowadays. It's pretty common.
Yes.
Not the guess I was looking for, though, Barbara. Have a great rest of your weekend, okay?
Okay, thank you so much.
Very good. Let's go to Mary. Mary, you're on WGN. Hey, Mary.
Good afternoon.
How are you doing? How was your Thanksgiving?
Our Thanksgiving was great. We had beef stew, pumpkin pie, and cauliflower salad.
Cauliflower and beef stew. That's the no turkey at your meal, Mary. No turkey. Oh, the suspense is killing me. Looks like we lost Mary. She's in a bad cell area. We'll try and get her back after the break. 312-981-7200. If you can guess that in 1968, a person held what job for 15 years? Now that person holds it on average for 26 years. And by the way, if you get the answer correct today, you're going to get a $50 gift card to the 5050 Restaurant Group to be used at any of their 14 fantastic establishments all over Chicago, including Roots Pizza and Westtown Bakery. All right, Kevin Wells, thanks for waiting patiently. So we talked on Wednesday. I was in for Chicago's Afternoon News, and it was rather blasphemous, the idea of a sundae bar that I was going to bring as dessert, and only that. I didn't want to do pies. I wanted to just bring ice cream and a bunch of toppings for the kids and the adults and everything. And you were a little skeptical. Right, Kevin?
Yeah, I mean, I've done the ice cream bar at, you know, family parties and such before, and I like the idea. I just think you got to have the pie, too. I think that's like an American Thanksgiving staple.
Yeah, well, we didn't, and it didn't matter. Everyone was thrilled.
Love that.
People were talking about, I don't really like pie all that much anyways, and pie is such a filling thing to have after the most filling meal of the year. Ice cream, you can put a scoop in, put a couple toppings in, have a little bit, walk away, come back. I know in theory, I guess you could do that with pie too, take a bite or here or there. But I was so sick year after year of throwing away pies and so glad that I was able to do it. So.
Well, it's actually funny you mentioned that. We had a Friendsgiving on Sunday and same thing happened. We all ate a bunch of food. My friend had this huge apple pie from Costco. He's the only one who had a slice, and he goes, what am I going to go do, return this now?
Right.
One slice taken out of it, and he's
exactly.
like, I'm not going to eat this whole thing.
Ice cream, you just put it back in the freezer, lasts a long time. You're in good shape. Well, thanks, Kevin.
Well, I'm glad it went well
Thank
for you.
I appreciate that. Oh, boy, we got a lot of guesses now on the line. 312-981-7200 if you want to get yours in as well. Tell you what, we're going to take a break, but David, don't go anywhere. Carol, Cheryl, Mary, stay on the line. We'll get your guesses after this on Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. John Hansen here on Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. We're taking you up till 2 o'clock today, just an hour-long show ahead of Northwestern football. All right, we are continuing on with our question of the day. In just a moment, we're going to talk with Audrey Anderson from Anderson Attorneys about and Advisors to talk about the McMichaels case, the Audrey Arbery case. But first, we want to try and get an answer here to the question of the day, which is in 1968, a person held what job on average for 15 years? Now a person holds that job on average for 26 years. Let's go to Cheryl. Cheryl, good afternoon. You're on WGN. How are you doing today?
Yes, good afternoon. Doing well. How are you?
Good. How was your Thanksgiving?
Oh, it was pretty good. How about you?
It was pretty good. That's how I'd phrase that as well. All right, what's your guess?
My guess is teacher.
Teacher. So you think the teachers are teachers longer now than they were back in the 60s?
Yeah.
It's a great guess. It is not the guess that we were looking for, though. But thanks for calling.
Yeah, because for me, this is my 30th year of teaching,
hey.
So that's why I thought of it.
There you go. Well, congratulations. What grade do you teach?
I actually teach multiple grades because I'm an orchestra teacher, so I start little kids on, like, beginning violin and then teach them all the way up through middle school orchestra.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, as a former band person who wished I could play in the orchestra because it always seemed a lot fancier than what we were playing in the concert band, thank you for all that you do. Love the arts. And thanks for the call today, okay?
Thank you.
Yeah,
take care.
Thanks very much, Cheryl. Let's go to Carol, who rhymes with Cheryl. Carol, good afternoon. How are you doing?
Hi, just fine, thank you.
What is your guess here on this Saturday afternoon?
Well, I was wondering if possibly a fireman. Seems that, you know, they have a limited time to work.
They
it's a tough job.
It is a tough job, and my whole family is firefighters, except for me. I don't know what happened, but here I am behind a microphone instead. But that is not the guess we were looking for. But you are right, right? Like, I think that, you know, it's a job that you can only do for so long, and maybe we're a little bit fitter. We live a little longer than we did in 68. So I can see the reasoning. It's just not our answer today, Carol.
All right.
Thanks for calling, though.
Happy
we appreciate
holidays.
It. Yeah, you too. Let's go to David. David, where are you calling from here on this Saturday?
I'm calling from Racine, Wisconsin.
Hey, our neighbors to the north up in Racine. How was your Thanksgiving?
Lousy, but I'm beginning to accept it.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry to hear that. Let's hope
it's
we can...
It's a little witticism.
Oh, okay.
It's so small, it's almost stillborn.
Okay. Let's go with the answer to your question. What do you think is the job that was held for 15 years in 1968 that's now held for 26 years?
How about Supreme Court Justice?
That is the answer to the question of the day. Congratulations, David.
Wow, I'm slicker than snot on a doorknob.
You've got these ready to go. Yes, and this came to me through an article I saw that was from the Presidential Commission that President Biden has laid out offering to study potential changes to the U.S. Supreme Court. A lot of this was in reference to last year after Ruth Bader Ginsburg dying, and obviously the Amy Coney Barrett was sworn in before the election, et cetera, et cetera. A lot of people wanted him to perhaps pack the court or not, so he said, well, let's take a look at the commission. And the commission really looked at this, how long these terms are, and there's a proposal in this commission perhaps to create staggered 18-year terms for the justices. We'll talk a little bit more about it later on in the show. But for now, you've got the prize. Congratulations.
Outstanding.
All right, well, stay on the line because you have going home with a wonderful $50 gift card to the 50-50 Restaurant Group to be used at any of their 14 fantastic establishments all over Chicago, including Roots Pizza and Westtown Bakery. Yes, in the 60s, a Supreme Court justice would serve 15 years, now 26. Of course, it's a lifetime appointment if they so choose. All right, let's pivot over to the big story of the day. And to break it all down for us is attorney Audrey Anderson, criminal defense attorney for Anderson Attorneys and Advisors. And Audrey, you know, there keeps being these big cases and these big verdicts. And thanks for joining us here another week in a row.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me again.
Yeah, and obviously this case was emotional. In many ways, it was the eyes of the nation were on it, similar to the Rittenhouse case. And there were, you know, there was a claim of self-defense in this case. But people trying to kind of compare and contrast the Rittenhouse trial and the McMichaels trial, I mean, there aren't too many other similarities beyond just the simple defense that they were using.
That's very true, right? Except for their defense of self-defense, there really wasn't that much to compare that's similar between the two of them. Rittenhouse obviously had a steep climb, but with this, the defense theirs is even harder to prove that they were acting in self-defense.
Yeah, let's dive into that a little bit more, because some people might look at it and say, well, then how easy, if you don't dive into it too deeply, they're both self-defense cases. Why did the prosecution have such a hill to climb in the Rittenhouse case versus in the McMichaels or the Ahmaud Arbery case, the defense had such a high hill to climb? Why the difference?
Right, with Arbery, that unfortunate victim, he was just out and about jogging. He didn't have any weapons. He wasn't in the middle of a riot. And it was actually these three defendants who were charged that were pursuing him. Whereas in Rittenhouse, the prosecutor had a steep climb as compared to Rittenhouse because he was already in the middle of a riot with violence being provoked all around him. So it was completely different factual scenarios and the age difference, too. Rittenhouse was a teenager. These three defendants in Arbery were much older.
Let's talk about the concept of a citizen's arrest. I know the law was changed after this case kind of broke out and was high profile in Georgia. Of course, it was still a defense that the Arbery defendants could use because it was legal, I guess, at the time of when they did this. Is that a very common thing? I mean, are there laws across our country that allow citizen's arrest that maybe we aren't even aware of here in locally or nearby?
There are laws. They're very infrequently used as defenses and very rarely utilized at trial at all. But yes, there are actually laws with regards to citizen's arrest.
Why? I want to say, like, why do they exist, right? And I guess in an active situation, you should be allowed to detain someone if they're in the act of committing something heinous and, you know, that's your only defense. But it's a real gray area legally, right? Because, you know, you're obviously, you might end up in court about it, and it's a hard thing to prove, I imagine.
Completely right. It's very, very hard to prove. And I think the rationale behind it, some of them are archaic from the times of the Civil War, but the more recent laws that have evolved are pretty much to assist law enforcement. So if you see an officer that's in distress, citizens can jump in and assist the law enforcement officer with his or her duties, not necessarily for the civilian to take things into their own hands.
When you look at the deliberation time between these two cases, I mean, they were both complicated cases. The Rittenhouse case, there was different charges, you know, for the victims, and they had to look at each victim individually and multiple counts. But you could say the same thing about this case. You had three defendants with, well, sometimes like nine counts each, but it only took, what, 11 hours for the Arbery trial to come back. I guess that just points to what the deliberation might have been like in that jury room.
Exactly. There was a lot of evidence in the Arbery case. However, there weren't as many videos. There was truly the one from the co-conspirator, co-defendant, and there weren't other individuals that were around who also could testify. It was the unfortunate victim, the three defendants, and some minor civilians as well.
When I a lot of talk was made about the defense in this case. And, you know, we talked about this last week, the idea of how could anyone defend someone they know to be guilty or to have done something like this. But, you know, in a defense, a right to a defense is a very important thing in this country. It's the bedrock of who we are. I was just wondering if you had a chance to really kind of dive into what the defense was presenting. I know there was a lot of hay made about the remarks that one of the defense attorneys made talking about the victim's dirty toenails. And I don't know if you saw that, and I don't want you to disparage another defense attorney, but you've got to, I guess, be delicate in how you present the defense as to not offend the jury with something so sensational, right?
That's very true. You really try not to disparage the alleged victim, the deceased in the case, just because it could turn the jurors off to you, and they're trying to listen to you as a defense attorney. Obviously, what you argue is not evidence, but you do want the jurors to like you as a defense attorney, to empathize with your client. So you really try not to say disparaging comments. I don't know if that particular attorney had just had it slip out, or they were just trying to reiterate the fact that how could he have gone jogging without socks on? But there could have been a better phraseology for that attorney.
Yeah, I mean, that's got to be a fine line, though, right? Yeah, you don't want to obviously make the victim out to be an evil person that could turn you off. But if you're trying to show that the potential victim, especially in a self-defense case, may not be as quote-unquote wholesome as the prosecution makes it seem, that's got to be a hard line for a defense attorney. I don't know if you've dealt with something specific like that, but just in general, coming off as likable while also presenting hard facts to present, that's not easy.
Right. It's definitely not easy, because you do want to be zealous for your client, and you do want to paint the victim as the aggressor in this case, especially with self-defense. So you want to say that he had no right to be going through a house to look, even if he hadn't stolen any items. You want to put some of that in a negative light for the victim so that you can defend your client.
I was I almost, when I woke up on Wednesday morning, I think a lot of people felt this. They're like, we're going to get a verdict today just for the fact that Thanksgiving is tomorrow. Now, they would have come back on Wednesday, the jury, or excuse me, Friday. They weren't going to get a full four-day weekend. I know that people want everyone to analyze the case no matter what the circumstances are for as long as it takes. But do you see that on Fridays or leading up to holidays, that juries are antsy to get things done?
I do, and I have seen that, and speaking with other attorneys, we've seen that as well. But that's always a concern as it's nearing a weekend, and especially a holiday weekend and a long weekend, to have a jurist take a day off and then come back. Some might argue that the jurors feel rushed to complete it because they don't want to have this looming over their head. They could be concerned that perhaps that they're sequestered, so they're not home with their family at Thanksgiving or a big holiday. But sometimes that is an argument, and I'm sure that that's probably one of the arguments these defense attorneys are going to be making, that these jurors felt rushed because it was Thanksgiving the following day.
Oh, really? That could be used or brought up in an appeal?
It could. It's never successful.
Okay.
It's always something that one defense attorney tries.
All right. I appreciate the honesty. Yes, of course. You want to try whatever you can. All right, Audrey, we're going to put you on hold here. Attorney Audrey Anderson, criminal defense attorney from Anderson Attorneys and Advisors. With her expertise, we're going to talk about video, the video evidence being presented in court nowadays, the arguments of is it too blurry, is it not, what versions do you need to show, et cetera, and why video evidence was so key in the last two big trials that we've been talking about. We'll get to that after the news here on WGN. That does mean next week, somewhat, we're back to our regular time. 3 to 5 p.m. will be Let's Get Legal powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. That's next Saturday. Again, today we're just until 2 o'clock with our one-hour show. Let's continue our conversation with Attorney Audrey Anderson, criminal defense attorney from Anderson Attorneys and Advisors. We're talking about the Ahmaud Arbery murder trial, the three guilty verdicts for the McMichaels, the two McMichaels, and the other defendant, William Roddy Bryan. And Audrey, when I was listening to the jury, the foreman reading the charges, or maybe it was the judge who ultimately read them, there's so many different murder, like there's malice murder, which was the top one, then there's felony murder, there's like four felony murder counts. Are there like differences between them? Why are there so many counts for each person?
Right, there are differences, and it's based upon intent and whether or not you were the actual one that pulled the trigger, or if you were just part of it standing by. So that's why the son, he was charged with slightly different Travis as compared to his dad, Greg, and his friend, Roddy.
Okay.
Brian.
But it's not unusual to be found guilty of multiple murder charges if it just the language of the charge fits with what happened. It's okay for, or it's normal for a couple different charges to come back guilty.
That's absolutely normal. That's how most prosecutors do. They charge these in a variety of different ways, different intents or different actions, because they want to ensure that the jury has all the options available to them. So it's very, very common.
That makes sense. All right, let's talk about video evidence, because, and you can let us know, I mean, you spent time as a prosecutor in the DuPage County's attorney's office, state's attorney's office, now as a defense attorney. It seems obvious to me, but let me know for sure. Are we seeing more and more video evidence as cell phones continue to get better and better?
We definitely are. People are taking photos and videos of everything. There's surveillance cameras, Ring doorbell cameras now. There's just so many more things where you can be recorded with or without even realizing it.
Do you have a difference of opinion about video evidence switching from a prosecutor to a defense attorney?
Right. As a prosecutor, it was excellent evidence. As a defense attorney, it's really hard to go against what the video shows. And you can argue if it's been tampered or altered with and have experts analyze it. But it is a lot more difficult to overcome a video because the jurors can see it for themselves what
right.
actually happened that time.
Right. And look, that can be a good thing because, like, in this trial, I mean, it was strange that one of the defendants was the person who took the video. And without the video, I mean, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if these guys walked. Or if they were never charged.
Right. That's so true. Because the one argument was that the alleged victim, he lunged for the gun. They were struggling and it went off. But the video clearly showed that they were chasing him, boxing him with vehicles. He was unarmed, that they approached him, that they were the aggressors. So the video painted a completely different picture than what the defendants were arguing.
Right. So in my mind, and I think a lot of people listening will say, well, good, right? Like, we got the truth. And I know you're a criminal defense attorney, but the truth is what we all seek, which is great. And defense attorneys still have a role. But I do wonder, though, that, you know, sometimes when we see these videos, we react so suddenly. They're so violent. They seem to paint a picture one way. But I imagine that makes your job tough, especially in situations where a video is part of the story, but it doesn't offer all the context. And it may seem like justice is being done, but there are other pieces of evidence there. And you really, I mean, the jury needs to see the video, but, you know, sometimes the video doesn't tell the whole story. And that makes it really hard on folks like you.
That is very true. Sometimes the video only shows the one perspective, one angle, or it's grainy, it's dark outside. It doesn't capture the entire audio. There are so many things that need to be put into evidence, introduced into evidence besides just the video itself.
How do you go about getting a jury to, you know, to acknowledge, hey, look, here's what we saw, but here's what you're not, what you may not be considering. Here's some other evidence. Is it about leveling with the jury, saying, like, look, I know this is what this looks like, but hey, let's consider these other factors?
Right. That's very true, because you don't want the jurors to think you're talking down to them or belittling them. But again, it's obvious what's out there. So you have to acknowledge it. Explain it away with other evidence, like put themselves in your client's shoes or see it from a different angle than how the video was shown, because perhaps the video is taken behind a person's back and you don't actually see the eyes or the actions in its entirety.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is now, maybe video evidence was different back when video was less, you know, out there, but also every one of us now has taken videos on our cell phone. So when I hear arguments like, oh, this has been doctored or it's more blurry, I think you do run the risk of a jury, like you said, being talked down to because they're like, hey, I know how video works. I know how it goes on my phone. I know how it, you know, might be a little blurry or it might have been a little, you know, moving it up and down too quickly because, you know, I was running while I took the video or something. I think that jurors, you know, they're used to using this sort of equipment now. So it's harder to argue that what they're watching isn't true or real.
That's a very good point. Yes, that's absolutely correct.
I love ending when Audrey tells me that was a great point. I think that's that's always how I like to wrap up these interviews, Audrey, when you make me feel like I said something real smart. So I appreciate that, Audrey.
That's my pleasure.
Yeah. Well, as of, you know, obviously, oh, and the last thing I wanted to ask you about, so we're not going to end on my high note, was that there's this case isn't done. Obviously, this specific case isn't done because we'll have a sentencing process, we'll have an appeals process, but the federal government is coming in with hate crime charges. And I know a lot of people are saying, well, it seems a little superfluous now. But from what we're hearing, the DOJ is still going to pursue these charges, right?
Correct. Correct. They are pursuing them because that state does not have hate crime statutes. And so the feds can swoop in and charge the hate crime as well as that it infringed upon this victim's civil rights.
What?
So it's how come he can also be charged civilly?
What would be, so it would open up civil potential too?
Correct.
Okay. I was wondering what the end goal is for the Department of Justice. I imagine also it's to, you know, set an example of what is acceptable and what is not acceptable in certain places.
Correct. Correct. And to make a point that they were using this, they were threatening him in the public because of his race. And that's how the Department of Justice can charge these three individuals federally.
All right. Attorney Audrey Anderson, criminal defense attorney from Anderson Attorneys and Advisors. Thank you so much for your time again. We appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. Thank you again for having me.
Always so great. And what's wonderful about Audrey is, as I mentioned, she was in the prosecutor's side for the state's attorney's office in DuPage County and now on the defense side. So we get unique perspectives there. All right. We're going to take a break and then we're going to have the top three legal stories of the week. And then, I don't know, I think I'm going to open up them something I call You Be the Jury. The third story I want to talk about is that Supreme Court justice story. The idea of, do we want 18-year terms for Supreme Court justices? I know everyone's always in favor of term limits for congresspeople and senators, even though they don't exist right now, at least federally. I know everyone's always in favor of term limits, but are you also in favor of term limits for Supreme Court justices? I want to know your opinion on that. 312-981-7200, and I'll give you and tease ahead the question of the day for the end of the show and the next week's show after this on WGN. Top three legal stories of the week include some COVID news in a way. U.S. President Joe Biden on Friday calling on nations expected to meet at the World Trade Organization next week, although that meeting has now been postponed. He wants nations to agree to waive intellectual property protections for vaccines in the wake of the new identification of the new variant. A meeting has been postponed. President Biden saying the news about this new variant should make clearer than ever why this pandemic will not end until we have global vaccination. This news today reiterates the importance on moving on waiving intellectual property protections quickly. A lot of pro-business people say that Pfizer, Moderna, Johnson & Johnson, they've spent years and a couple years now and, you know, billions on research and have developed this vaccine. They own that. But other people are saying, hey, it's a global pandemic. Let's release the intellectual property on this to allow other manufacturers to be able to develop and mass produce as many vaccines as possible. The Biden administration facing criticism over a failure to get vaccines to poorer countries while supplying free booster shots to Americans. Although I will say the United States has given out the most free vaccines out of any country and still have another 80 million or so, they say, they've committed to distributing, which is well more than any other country. U.S. Attorney, story number two, U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland is directing federal prosecutors to prioritize prosecution of airline passengers committing assaults and other crimes aboard aircraft. Amen. The FAA said on November 4th it had referred more than three dozen unruly passengers to the FBI for potential criminal prosecution amid a sharp rise in onboard incidents this year. I've heard Peter Greenberg talking about this as well, and he talks a lot about this with Eye on Travel, the idea that there's been a lot of people referred to for prosecution, but we haven't seen the big fines or the big prosecutions. And what's really the deterrent if you're just going to slap people on the wrist, or even worse, tell them you're going to slap them on the wrist and never slap them on the wrist. U.S. airlines have reported a record number of disrupted and sometimes violent incidents this year. Attorney General says the Department of Justice is committed to using its resources to do its part to prevent violence, intimidation, threats of violence, and other criminal behavior that endangers the safety of passengers, flight crews, and flight attendants on commercial aircraft. It's something I'll never get. I understand we have debates about masks and, okay, fine, we can talk about that here on the radio and whether kids should be wearing masks in school and all that sort of thing. If you listen to me regularly, you know my thoughts on that. But you were told and you bought a ticket and it told you you had to wear a mask. So do it, right? The compliance element of that was done when you bought the ticket, right? If you didn't like the rules for the airplane, then don't buy the ticket in the first place. It says right when you buy the ticket what you have to do. So if you're not doing it, you know, I don't care how good of an argument you have about freedom of whatever. You know, you can make that argument before you buy the ticket. Sure, let's have that discussion. But once you buy it, you've already committed to following the rules. And when you don't, just sit there and be quiet because the rest of us want to go places. Can you tell I'm going to go to Las Vegas in a couple weeks and I hope my flight isn't delayed one penny or one moment because I've been waiting so long to go? All right, here's the third and final story of the week. A presidential commission studying ideas to change the U.S. Supreme Court indicated continued interest in term limits, and this was released a couple weeks ago. President Biden committed created the commission in April to analyze proposals to reform the high court. And one of the most popular things, and it has bipartisan support, is the idea to create staggered 18-year terms for the justices, which would be time to open up a seat every 2 years. So no matter who was president, every 2 years, a Supreme Court seat would open up. And then whoever was president would get to nominate that person. It would go through the approval process through the Senate and et cetera, et cetera. And then you would have an 18-year term. 312-981-7200. You can text, you can call if you, how you feel about that. We just got a few more minutes left in the show, but we've had already a text about it. This comes from the 630. John, I really think there should be term limits and staggered, so no president, no matter what party, can stack the court. It needs to be long enough that they can make a real difference. So 13 to 17 years. So again, not with elections. Well, 630, you're right on with what the commission says, too. They suggested that there's bipartisan support for an 18-year term. And it's really amazing. We are the only major constitutional democracy that doesn't have a retirement age nor a fixed term limit for its high court justices. Interesting, because justices are getting younger and younger as presidents want to cement their legacy in history. So they keep on nominating folks that are in their 40s. Nothing against people in their 40s, but maybe they don't have the legal mind of someone in their 60s who's done it their whole life. Or maybe it doesn't matter how old you are. Maybe there's someone who could be very successful in their 70s and 80s that shouldn't be discriminated against because a president wants to submit their legacy and have a longer time of them in the court. If everyone's 18 years, then it doesn't matter. And then you can let that judge do their work over those 18 years. If you got any last-minute thoughts on that, 312-981-7200. Quick break, then we'll wrap things up here on Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. All right, got about 90 more seconds here to wrap things up here on Let's Get Legal this Saturday. We will be on next week 3 to 5 p.m. Just keep your pencils and scorecards ready. 414 says staggered term limits for U.S. Supreme Court is an excellent idea. I'm all about it, too. But the 847 has a great point. They said if a justice does happen to die in office, does that become the one that is then picked, even if the next 18-year justice coming up is someone else? Ooh, I don't know how they would do that, right? Because then maybe someone gets appointed just to finish the 18-year term, but what if there was only 1 year left, and then you're just appointed for 1 year, and then you're done? No, that doesn't seem fair. But then you don't want a vacancy in the court. We don't want only 8 Supreme Court justices have 4-4 decisions. We don't like ties here in America. We can't stand a soccer game because of it, let alone a Supreme Court decision. We don't want that. 312-981-7200 if you have any thoughts on that. We'll have to get to some of those a little bit later on next week. The 312 also said term limits should be applicable to Congress. Yeah, they are. It's a very popular thing that people want term limits in Congress and in Senate. But as of right now, federally speaking, you are A-okay. All right. That's going to do it for Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. Our question of the week next week is, when it comes to blank, Arkansas has the most per capita, Maine has the least. That's a tease. We'll find out the answer to that and plenty more coming up next week at 3 o'clock.